you know that theme song, and you probably know every word of that theme song, which has been around for more than four decades now. It is because of the work of an animation legend by the name of Joe Barbera. He and his partner, William Hanna, were Hanna-Barbera, one of the animation studios that launched the Flintstones and the Jetsons and Tom and Jerry and Scooby-Doo and Huckleberry Hound and Dastardly and Muttley and the Smurfs and Megilla Gorilla and on and on and on. When I heard that Joe Barbera had died yesterday at age 95, I knew I would have to go to the website of my friend Mark Evanier, who is a writer, a creator of comic strips, and a guy who knows all about this sort of stuff because he was also Joe Barbera's friend. And so after reading what Mark had on his website about Joe, I said, Mark, you got to come on my show this afternoon and talk a little bit about him. Welcome back to KMOX, Mark.
Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Tell me a little bit about where in the pantheon of animation legends Joe Barbera's memory belongs.
Well, it's kind of at the very top of the business. Bill and Joe, you can't really talk about Joe without talking about Bill. The two of them are the men who saved the animation business. They were the pioneers who took animation from theatrical animation at a time when it was dying off and launched television animation. They weren't the first ones to do cartoons for television, but they were the ones who showed everyone how to do it and how to get very rich doing it, too. You know, anytime you have an industry that's thriving, a new industry that's built, what happens is that someone comes along and shows everyone how to do it and how to get wealthy doing it, and everyone runs in and tries to copy them. And that's what Bill and Joe did. The first cartoon show they did for television was called Rough and Ready. They did it at a time when theatrical animation shorts were dying out. They had been doing those for years. They had been doing the Tom and Jerry cartoons for about 18 years for MGM. That department was shutting down. All these artists were out of work. Bill and Joe were going to be out of work. And so they invented television animation as we know it.
The Flintstones was the first primetime animated cartoon, right?
First show produced for primetime. There were cartoons, theatrical cartoons run in primetime before that, but they were the first. It was the first time anyone had actually produced a show specifically to air in primetime. Yeah.
Did the network go to them and say, we want to do this, or did they say, hey, we want to put something on in primetime?
What happened was that they were doing a couple of syndicated cartoon shows, Huckleberry Hound and Quick Draw McGraw, and they wanted to get into another market, and they went to the sponsors first. It was actually at that time the sponsors that put it on the air, and they sold the idea of doing a sitcom. People don't remember that the Flintstones was originally intended for adults. It originally aired at 9 o'clock in the evening. A kids show would have aired at 7:30, and their first sponsor was Winston Cigarettes, and they sold it to ad agencies, and ABC was kind of skeptical. They put it on. This was at a time when ABC was the third place network, and they were trying a little of everything. They put it on kind of as an experiment, and it clicked. And as it went on over the years, the audience got younger, and they moved it to earlier time slots. But it was started as an adult show.
Did it help that it was a blatant ripoff of The Honeymooners?
I don't think it hurt. a lot of the Hanna-Barbera shows started as, I would not use the term blatant ripoff, but started with an inspiration from something like the Flint, like a popular antecedent. Some of them strayed so far away from it that you couldn't tell the source material. Most people don't know that the Scooby-Doo show started out as Dobie Gillis. That's why Maynard looked like, that's why Shaggy looks like Maynard G. Krebs.
Uh-huh.
It started out with let's turn Dobie Gillis into a cartoon show, and
right.
It changed so much that you can't even recognize the source material. In the case of the Flintstones, it didn't change quite as much, and there was that obvious connection, but, you know, the Flintstones, the Honeymooners was a concept that worked.
And one of the things that made the Flintstones work for me was that, as you said, they wrote it on an adult level, so you could have all these great puns, the animals that were there, the bird that was the can opener, or was the turntable that played the records in prehistoric time, and all of that sort of stuff was part of what made Hanna-Barbera unique, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And the Flintstones was also the first time that anyone had ever tried to do a half-hour story in animation for television. Previously, all cartoon shows were 6 minutes, 7 minutes, because the kids have the short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically took one storyline, developed the full half hour, which allowed for more personality in the characters, allowed for more character comedy, and plenty of room for the you know, the monkeys and the dinosaurs and the birds and the, I mean, I just love those little inventions that they had all the time.
Now, this may be a sore subject for somebody who worked at Hanna-Barbera, but even when I was a kid, I remember thinking to myself, this has got to be cheap to make, because I have seen that character run by that rock. If I see Quick Draw McGraw run by that same rock and tree one more time, I'm going to throw something at the TV. I mean, it was, even if he was running for 30 seconds, he'd go by that rock 11 times.
The big joke on the internet today is that Joe's funeral procession is going to go by the same house. Bill and Joe, you know, did the shows cheaper than anyone had ever done, and they all just did them faster. And every caricature, you know, in the animation studio, one of the big sports is caricaturing the boss. Every caricature ever drawn of Bill Hanna had the caption "faster and cheaper" in it someplace. And that was, you know, you can say on one level it was greed and stinginess and frugality and an inattention to quality. On another level, it was trying to produce a show that was economically feasible for television. And I mean, the truth is someplace in both columns. They did the shows very cheap. The early Hanna-Barbera shows are much more inventive. The Huckleberry Hounds and Quick Draws and Yogi Bears are much more inventive than some of the later shows, where the animation was just cheap without being clever in many cases. And they kind of admitted that. I mean, in the 70s, when I worked for Joe and Bill, they weren't that enamored of their product, although they would defend it as the best possible under the restrictions they worked under. And I think that's a much longer debate than we have time for. But what they did in Huckleberry Hound, if you watch those things, Bill Hanna pretty much not only directed them or supervised the direction, and he had all these ways of cutting around the action, like in a radio show where you think you've seen something you haven't seen. In a lot of those Hanna-Barbera shows, you think you saw physical actions you didn't, but they occur off camera, or they occurred, you know, with fast cuts, and they faked it. They're very clever in how little they did sometimes and got away with it.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm Paul Harris talking with my buddy Mark Evanier about his friend Joe Barbera, who died yesterday at the age of 95. He was your friend because he hired you, but you never actually called him Joe, did you?
I think I stammered it out once or twice and sounded like Porky Pig. I had trouble calling him Joe. Like you would have trouble calling your uncle by his first name. And it wasn't just that Joe was particularly avuncular, but he was Joe Barbera. He was the guy whose shows I grew up on, and he didn't stand on ceremony. He wanted everybody to be on a first name basis with him, but there was just something about him. He's Joe Barbera. I didn't want him to be an equal. I didn't want to bring him down to my level.
Everybody who hasn't worked in cartoons would think immediately, oh man, that has got to be fun. That's got to be a fun job to have. Was it fun working for Hanna-Barbera?
Yeah, up to a point it was. I left because I was afraid it was going to stop being fun, and I wanted to leave while I was still in love. But it was fun in the sense that the studio was a very creative place full of very fun people, very colorful people. I shared an office there for a while with a man named Tex Avery, who many people would know who that was, who was one of the great cartoon directors of the world. And you just walk down the hall, and there's all these wonderful artists and creative people doing things, sometimes more creative than what got on the air.
Yeah, I was going to say, how can you get any work done? Wouldn't you want to just go in their office and say, tell me stories?
We did. You know, I had an office right across from the recording studio, and I'd be sitting there with all the writers talking and plotting against management, and a session would let out, and Jonathan Winters would walk in, and I would say to him, oh, I hear you're here to fix the plumbing, and he would start being a plumber, and we'd be there for an hour and a half. Jonathan, you know, doing the equivalent of three albums for us, right on in the office.
The people who did the Warner Brothers cartoons, they had Mel Blanc. Yes. What, was there an equivalent of the Hanna-Barbera?
Oh, was there? There was a man named Dawes Butler, who was the greatest cartoon voice man who ever lived. And if somebody said Mel, I wouldn't argue the point. But Dawes was the voice of just the Hanna-Barbera. I'll do this real fast. Huckleberry Hound, Mr. Jinx, Yogi Bear, Dixie, Quick Draw McGraw, Baba Louie, Snooper, Blabber, Augie Doggie, Elroy Jetson, Snagglepuss, Peter Potamus, et cetera, et cetera, Hokey Wolf. And Dawes, one of the secrets of Hanna-Barbera's success was that Dawes was such a great, brilliantly expressive voice that he made up for the fact that the animation wasn't as subtle and nuanced as it might have been in another era. There was also a lovely man named Don Messick who played the straight man. He was Boo Boo. He was the Ranger. He was Scooby Doo. He was Papa Smurf. And they had a couple other great people. They had, of course, Mel worked for them. And And Alan Reed was the voice of Fred Flintstone, and Gary Owens, and Janet Waldo, and Julie Bennett, and Gene Vanderpile. These are really some terrific people who with their voices, managed to somehow compensate for the fact that the cartoons didn't move. They always sounded good.
These are creations that have lasted. You know, you talk about some of these characters, and as I said when we started, some of these have been around for four decades and are still around today, playing on the Boomerang Channel. Do they air still with the original commercials that these guys did? You mentioned that
no.
The Flintstones was sponsored by Winston Cigarettes.
No. In fact, they've lost a lot of those commercials. When the people making the DVDs are running around desperately looking for the commercials to put them on the DVDs. One of the problems Hanna-Barbera had over the years was it went through a series of, you know, corporate owners who sometimes didn't respect the heritage. The people now do. They see that there's some money in the heritage, but there are people running around now scrambling, looking for color prints of some of their old cartoons so you can put them out on DVD. They didn't save them, unfortunately.
But they actually did the commercials with the characters doing the commercials, right?
Frequently, yeah. Well, the early Hanna-Barbera characters were the spokespeople for a lot of Kellogg's cereals. Yogi was on the OK's box, and Quick Draw was on the Sugar Smacks box, and they also did the commercials for them, yeah.
Were they the first ones to see the opportunity to use television as a kind of route for commerce there, where their characters could do the commercials and the companies would sponsor their product?
Yes, that was one of the big things. Yeah, the early Huckleberry Hound show was like a half-hour commercial for Kellogg's cereals, and they're all throughout there. And then they even did cross promotions. Hanna-Barbera was partially owned by Columbia Pictures in its early days. And if you ever watch Bye Bye Birdie, movie Bye Bye Birdie, just count the number of Hanna-Barbera plugs for merchandise. Everybody in there is wearing a Huckleberry Hound T-shirt, or there's a Yogi Bear stuffed doll in the scene. And the man who directed Bye Bye Birdie was a man named George Sidney, who was on the board of directors of Hanna-Barbera at the time. So, you know, you had that kind of cross-pollination going at the same time.
I knew that Joe was sick only because I check out your website on a daily basis, and I know you had started writing some things about him, and of course you got great obituaries and great stories that you've included on there, plus some clips to some of the things that we've been talking about here. But tell me how Joe was in his 90s when it came to creating things. Was there still the Hanna-Barbera magic there? Are they still important in the world of animation in the 21st century?
Well, I think the library is important. Joe actually produced or supervised, to the extent he could, a cartoon short in the last year. Both Hanna-Barbera were guys who worked until the day they dropped. I mean, they never retired. And the other joke making around the internet is, you know, Joe was in a coma the last week, during which he sold three series. I think I started that one going around. But it's almost true, because he was such a force that way. And he came into the office not every day the last few years, but he came in whenever he was up to it and would work on ideas and work on concepts. He just, I hope I have that kind of energy when I'm in tomorrow.
Yeah.
but let alone when I get to be near his age. And by the way, the official biographies say he was 95, and there's a lot of historians who say he was 97. At some point in the line, he shaved a few years off his bio and got stuck with the wrong year.
Those are the years he was running by that same rock and tree.
Yeah, that's right.
So they don't count. Yeah. Mark, thanks for your expertise. As always, I appreciate it.
Right.
Mark Evanier, you can find him online, a wonderful site to check out. It's called News From Me, the M-E being his initials, Mark Evanier, newsfromme.com. And as I mentioned, he's got lots more links about this animation legend, Joe Barbera. How about a guy who created things that have stuck around and will stick around for generations and generations and generations of people who like cartoons? Mark Evanier, thanks for joining us this afternoon here on News Talk 1120 KMOX.